A plane crash in Russia last weekend killed many of the top political and military figures of Poland. And we thought that as part of our ongoing backstory series on post-communist states, it would be a good time to look at how Poland has changed in the 20-plus years since the fall of communism. Joining me now is Yale history professor Timothy Snyder. He's the author of numerous books, including most recently The Red Prince, The Secret Lives of a Habsburg Archduke. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show today. Hello.
Very glad to be here. Thanks.
The plane crash killed Poland's president, Lech Kaczynski, military leaders, members of parliament, many other crucial people, mostly members of the ruling party?
Mostly members of the political party associated with the president, which is the major far-right party. It's now not in power.
It's not in power because it was out of power anyway, or... Because that government, he was originally, for a while, he shared power with his brother, didn't he?
Lech and his brother Yaroslav were a very powerful set of twin brothers, which was, of course, unusual in the history of politics. They both came out of the Solidarity Movement, and in the early part of the 21st century, they established their own political party called Law and Justice. And for a while, they managed to be simultaneously president, that was Lech, and prime minister Yaroslav. However, that government compromised itself by a coalition with some parties which were even to its right, and they've been out of power for a while now. So now power is split between the president, who was in a right-wing party, and the government, which is rather a center-right government.
Which has allowed the country to remain relatively stable in the wake of this tragedy.
A lot of things have allowed that. The sadness of the original Katyn massacre was the mass murder of Poland's elite. And the reason why this plane crash is so painful for Poles is that they see their elite dying again in those horrible of ironies in pretty much exactly the same place. But the difference is that the elite in Poland is now so much larger than it was in 1940. And although each of these individual people, these 96 people, is irreplaceable, there are people who can step up and fulfill their roles. So although the shock is enormous, each of the individual institutions in which these people worked have continued to function well.
What were the circumstances of the Katyn massacre 70 years ago?
The Katyn massacre is the most painful episode of Stalinism in Poland, and it came at a curious moment, which is sometimes hard for us in the West and in the States to remember. It was a result of the beginning of the Second World War. The beginning of the Second World War began not just with the German invasion of Poland, but with the Soviet invasion of Poland as well. Between 39 and 41, the Germans and the Soviets had divided the country between them, and each of them pursued, the Germans in the West, the Soviets in the East, a policy of social decapitation. That means finding the elites and killing them. The Germans and the Soviets were both explicit about that, although they had different ideological reasons for coming to the conclusion that that was a good idea. The Katyn massacre took place after the Red Army took and held prisoners from the Polish army. Many of these were people who had just been fighting the Germans. The Soviets held them for several months in three prison camps. And the ruins of Orthodox monasteries. Then, after considering the matter, Beria, who was then in charge of the NKVD, and Stalin decided in March of 1940 that the thing to do with these people was to execute them. The reason why this was so painful for Polish society was that most of these military officers who were shot were not professional military men. Some of them were, of course, but most of them were reserve officers, which in interwar Poland meant anybody who had a university degree. So the 22,000 or so people who were shot were engineers and lawyers and doctors and veterinarians and agronomists and botanists and physicists and so on.
So this ceremony, in a way, was an act of reconciliation between the Poles and the Russians?
Terribly interesting politics of memory in Russia. The position of Putin in previous years has essentially been that Stalinism is a matter for Russians, that since Russians suffered, Russians will be the ones who decide how it's going to be judged, and it's not really anybody else's business very much. And anyone else who tries to come up with a different position, be they Ukrainians or Poles, is to be marginalized or is to be mocked. Putin has made an opening to the Poles over Katyn. There's an international political context to this, which is worsening Polish-Ukrainian relations. The politics of memory does have a kind of calculating side to it. But in any event, Putin made an opening to the Polish government, inviting a mutual commemoration of Katyn. It's the 70th anniversary, of course, this month. And this means not only the very first time that the Poles and the Russians have done anything like this, it means that the Russians themselves now have to reconsider Stalinism, because Putin's view has been to try to pick aspects of Stalinism which would endorse his version of authoritarianism, that Stalin was a good manager, that Stalin won the Second World War, and so on, while somehow extracting from the record the mass murder. That's going to be harder now. And ironically, not just because of the commemoration, but because of the plane crash. The plane crash has meant that many more people in Russia and around the world know the details of the original Katyn massacre. And it should be said, to Putin's credit, the way he has personally reacted to the plane crash has been to talk about the history of Stalinism in a way that he's never talked about it before.
Following the crash, the Los Angeles Times wrote, "The tragic irony of the crash was so extreme that it seemed destined for conspiracy theory." Is that what's happening?
A little bit, of course.
Are people seeing this as a Russian conspiracy or somebody else's conspiracy?
Well, one could imagine all kinds of conspiracy theories when, you know, everybody in the plane is, I mean, nothing like this has happened really in history before, where so much of the elite was gathered into one airplane and then that airplane crashed. Whenever anything like that happens, especially in a country like Poland, which has seen so many tragedies of this kind, one would almost want to say, they had a prime minister who died in a plane crash during the Second World War, a very decent man. There's going to be a certain amount of conspiracy theorizing, and there are people in Poland who are thinking conspiratorially about this. However, I would emphasize that is, although it's played up, and I see it here in the Austrian press too, it's not really a major aspect of what's going on in Poland. What's chiefly going on in Poland is that people, despite political differences, are gathering to mourn. That's the main current of what's happening in Poland.
Although there has been some debate about whether President Kaczynski deserves to be buried in the 1,000-year-old Wawel Cathedral, the main burial site of Polish monarchs since the 14th century.
It's a very tricky business with Wawel, because Polish presidents haven't been buried there. Polish kings were, and then the interwar leader of Poland, Józef Piłsudski, is buried there. And Kaczynski's family presumably wants Kaczynski to be buried there because Kaczynski wants to associate himself, or wanted to associate himself, with Pilsudski's legacy, which is chiefly a legacy of Polish independence. You're right, that's really the one divisive question in Poland right now, whether Kaczynski, who was a one-term president, who was going to lose if he ran for a second term, and whose politics were incredibly divisive in many ways, whether he deserves that. But I would emphasize that's really the one divisive question right now.
My guest is Tim Snyder, professor of history at Yale University. We're talking about post-communist Poland as part of our backstory series on the former communist countries of Eastern Europe. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. I was surprised that Putin was willing to do this with Kaczynski, because in 2006, Kaczynski proposed a wide range of EU sanctions against Russia. He also, Poland has also joined the European Union, and there was the whole matter of missiles being put on Polish soil. Hasn't there been a lot of tension between the two countries?
There certainly has. It has to do partly with the border, as you correctly say, between the European Union and Russia. Poland's been a member since 2004. To some extent, if Russia wants to do business with the European Union, it has to go through Poland. That can cut both ways. It can mean that the Russians can try to intimidate Poland, but it can also mean that the Russians try to cultivate Poland. And I think that has something to do with with Putin's recent initiative. Another thing which has happened is that in the last few months, Polish-Ukrainian relations have soured a bit, precisely on questions of historical memory. The outgoing Ukrainian president named someone a hero of Ukraine, which is an official title, who is associated with, although was not directly involved in, the mass murder of tens of thousands of Poles during the Second World War. That was quite a blow to President Kaczynski personally, who had been very much a supporter of an independent Ukraine. And it's my suspicion that Putin saw an opening right then. It was 3 or 4 days after that that he issued the invitation to the Polish government having to do with Katyn. You're quite right that Poland's orientation has been very much to the West. You're quite right that Kaczynski has been someone who has been suspicious of Russia, and even more suspicious of Germany, it should be said. Kaczynski was not a cosmopolitan. He was not someone who knew foreign languages. He was not someone who was comfortable in foreign countries. He was someone who was comfortable within the framework of national history, which meant that an opening having to do with Katyn made an awful lot of sense, because this was an area where Kaczynski would feel comfortable, ironically, talking to the Russians. Of course, it's tragic how it all turned out.
Well, you talked about the tensions with Ukraine. The border with Ukraine shifted again and again throughout modern Polish history, also with Germany. Does that continue to be a sore point in its relations with its neighbors?
The history of Ukraine is very much the history of Poland and the history of Russia. You can't talk at all about Poland or Russia without Ukraine. Major elements of Polish culture and Russian culture come from Ukraine. As a result, both from the point of view of Warsaw and Moscow, it's sometimes hard to see just where one country begins and the other ends, and not just in territorial terms, in terms precisely of historical memory. The Poles and the Russians have played this radically differently since 1989. Poland has taken the view that the Polish-Ukrainian border is absolutely permanent, and it's in the interest of Poland for there to be an independent, sovereign, and secure Ukrainian state. Russia has been much more ambivalent and continues to be much more ambivalent about the desirability of an independent Ukraine, especially an independent Ukraine with an independent, westward-oriented foreign policy. So, if one wants to look at this whole thing in geopolitical terms, any Russian opening towards Poland is a bit of a source of worry in Kiev, just as any Russian opening towards Germany is going to be a source of worry for Poland.
The relations of many Eastern European countries, especially Ukraine, with Russia have been complicated by oil shipments and pipelines. Does that apply to Poland as well?
It's the absolutely fundamental issue. Russian foreign policy to Poland has basically, you know, involved adding insult to injury. The injury is that Poland has no energy supplies of its own, and one of its only sources of leverage on Russia is the fact that pipelines flow through Poland. Russia is now building a project called Nord Stream, which will circumvent Poland and allow gas to be shipped directly to German ports by sea. That's the injury part. The insult part has had to do with Stalinism, that is, refusing to recognize the extent of Polish suffering, treating the Red Army simply as liberators rather as bringing the communist regime as they also did. So you can see Putin's opening as removing the insult from the injury. The fundamental injury, the power relationship having to do with energy resources, is not going to change. But I don't mean to trivialize this. If Russia changes its historical discourse, that will mean quite a lot to Poles, and in the end it might mean even more to Russians.
In 2005, Lech Wałęsa came on this program. I'd like to play a clip from that interview where he describes his country's economic relationship with Russia.
We turned very quickly towards the West, trying to seek for generals, General Motors, General Electrics. And of course, well, the generals were not very willing to come in straight away, but some smaller ranking officers did. Whereas Russia proudly waited and is still there with all the halves of the final product. And it looks like a sieve just full of holes.
Now, Poland was one of the first post-communist governments in Eastern Europe to assert its independence in 1989. And didn't it embrace many of the market reforms that were touted by the West in the 90s and 2000s? Was the transition more successful than it's been in some of the other Eastern European countries?
Yeah, going back to the beginning, Poland is interesting in three ways. It was the one country under communism that had a large opposition movement. It was then, at the end of communism, the country which took advantage of Gorbachev's changed foreign policy and compromised its way out of communism. It thereby created a kind of model of peaceful revolution, which was then followed throughout the region and arguably in other places around the world. And then the third thing which was special about Poland, as you say, is that it's the one country where something like shock therapy actually turned a poor economy into a rich economy. In general, if you look around Eastern Europe, basically most of the countries that have joined the EU are doing much better, but the hierarchy is roughly the same. The ones that were relatively richer in 89 are still relatively richer. The main exception to that is Poland. Poland is a country which has grown in most of the last 20 years and even did relatively well during the financial crisis. It's a country which, despite the political chaos of the last decade, has continued to grow year on year economically. So it is rather a success story in those terms, yeah.
The president of Poland's central bank also died in the crash. Will that have an effect on the economy?
I wouldn't think so. His deputy is quite competent, and they you know, as one does in these situations, they announce the essential continuity of monetary policy to buy themselves some time.
Well, if Poland has been doing so well, why has it had these swings from left to right and then left and right again? Are the Polish people still unhappy with what's going on?
Well, they certainly are, but there's another explanation as well, which is that Poland began with riotous political divisions, unlike some other countries. It began with a big opposition, which was solidarity, and it began with communists who had already been thinking about how to govern, how to stay in power, and they turned themselves into social democrats. So from the very beginning, you had competitive elections between two well-organized political forces who knew what they were doing and had broad bases of political support. So after that, what you had was a division within Solidarity, roughly between the center and the right. And precisely because these were often people who were very close to one another personally, who had been working together all the way back to 1980 when the first strikes formed Solidarity, or sometimes even the 1970s as dissidents, these divisions were especially painful. And over the course of the 1990s, you saw a split between people like the Kaczynski brothers and, say, the more liberal people like Bronisław Geremek, who died recently, or Tadeusz Mazowiecki. And these people managed to form one last coalition in 1997. But in the 21st century, they haven't been speaking to each other. You had this painful division within Solidarity itself, which came to a head when the Kaczynski brothers won elections a few years ago and then refused to form a coalition with the other main Solidarity party, and choosing instead to form a coalition with two far right-wing parties, which really had nothing to do with Solidarity and had everything to do with empty populism. So you have these major divisions within Solidarity now, and ironically, they have to do with cultural issues, with biographical issues, with the impatience of the right to come to power, and then its haste to try to undo what it saw as all of the damage of the previous 20 years, and its idea that you can still orient politics around coming to terms with communism, around historical memory, which is, in a sense, what this is all about.
Tim, just one more question. President Obama rolled back part of President Bush's proposed missile defense shield that would have been situated or in Poland. But in January, the country announced it was placing an undisclosed number of U.S. Patriot missiles near Russian soil. Is that something that is popular in Poland?
Yeah, that's a good question. Popular in Poland is an American military presence. NATO is incredibly popular in Poland. For historical reasons, the Poles actually see NATO as a defense organization, as what it traditionally was, because they fear Russia, you know, with understandable justification. Particularly having missile defense is something which is popular among certain sectors of the Polish elite, especially on the Polish right. If you take an opinion poll, you won't get a majority of Poles who are in favor of it, however.
Timothy Snyder is a professor of history at Yale, author of numerous books, including most recently The Red Prince, The Secret Lives of a Habsburg Archduke. Thank you so much for talking with us on Backstory today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.